the real caste system of the Angreziyat caste system has not been appreciated. So they keep talking about the Brahmanical caste being the dominant because they controlled Sanskrit. That was the allegation, that they controlled Sanskrit and they knew Sanskrit, the others didn't, and therefore they had control of knowledge. But I don't think the corporate sector hires somebody because, you know, he knows Sanskrit. I don't think it happens. They do hire a lot of people because they know English. So that is the new elitism. How much you know English, what accent you use, determines your employability, it determines your matrimonial credentials and profile, social profile.
We have now a Q&A session where we have filtered out a number of questions that we received. I will, Veda will read out a few questions and then we will take it forward next. Veda?
So our first question is, how do we Indianize the young minds, and and they're going away from our roots and our culture, and how do we inculcate the idea of Indianness in our youth?
I would say we go back to education, education at home, education at school level, alternate models of education. Do we have to subscribe to this factory model of education that the British gave us? books in our mother tongue. It's been proven that children, learn better in their matrubhasha. So these are things that the education policy should focus on. It's also is there in letter, but not in spirit, because we've really not done anything about curriculum, bringing in Indian knowledge systems, things like that. But I think at an individual level, at a family level, one can do the best that one can by, you know, finding other sources of, if you're not unable to teach yourself, you can find other sources. These days, the internet is there. I think we should use it for good things. Like all technology can be used for as a force multiplier for good things. So education is something that we can take charge of ourselves.
How shall we educate our children?
Yeah. How do we Indianize?
In the young
ones. I see women here are wearing sari, but they all are wearing shirt and pants. So, prevail upon your children that at least on Sundays they wear Indian clothes and not Western clothes.
The next question is, how do we promote and nurture nationalistic academic research or nationalistic outlook in academic research?
Well, you know, there is the role for the government, because they own the machinery, resources, huge amount of funding, and that the government has not done. They've talked about it. The Ministry of Culture has not done it. You know, it's very interesting. The ICSSR, Indian Council of Social Science Research, I approached them many years ago under the new government only. The head was, the member secretary was a Malhotra, and I'm very embarrassed. I had nothing to do with it. And I tried to convince him that one of the things my foundation wants to do, we are doing, is a critique of social sciences as practice, so we can replace it with an alternative, our Vedic social sciences. And he kept returning back my proposal, saying you have to follow the social science methodology, but that is what I'm criticizing. So I have to follow the Western social science methodology. I have my proposal has to be approved by Western social sciences, even though my goal is to undermine them. So this is all contradictory. They've not been able to do it. But one thing I will tell you, the role of Indian languages has not been, like we are speaking in English. Now the role of Indian languages has not been properly appreciated. I think a large part of the real caste system of the Angreziyat caste system has not been appreciated. So they keep talking about the Brahmanical caste being the dominant because they controlled Sanskrit. That was the allegation, that they controlled Sanskrit and they knew Sanskrit, the others didn't, and therefore they had control of knowledge. But I don't think the corporate sector hires somebody because he knows Sanskrit. I don't think it happens. They do hire a lot of people because they know English. So that is the new elitism. How much you know English, what accent you use, determines your employability, it determines your matrimonial credentials and profile, social profile. So in fact, if they want to have a quota to bring up people, certain segments, they should have a job quota for people who are from the Indian language education system. They should have a quota like that, because that those people are at a handicap compared to the English. They should tell all these Mahindras and all the Tatas, everybody, that now you got to reserve 25% for Indian language speaking people. That will level off the playing field, and that is how we could probably become a more nationalistic society.
Again, the next one is also connected to the similar thing, is that how do we deal with increasing Hindu phobia in higher academics?
Oh, that's a favorite topic. It's an old topic. So, in Hindu phobia, is this anti-Hinduism kind of thing? So, we just came out with a book actually called 10 Heads of Ravan. 10 Heads of Ravan. I think you can buy it outside. We are training young scholars to be Kshatriyas, intellectual Kshatriyas. So, we this book takes 10. It book says that Ravan has been reincarnated as an intellectual, and these are 10 personas of Ravan, and each scholar took on one persona and wrote a big critical review. These are all Hindu phobic scholars. So we have people like Romila Thapar and Irfan Habib, we have Devdutt Patnaik, we have Shashi Tharoor also, we have Wendy Doniger, a whole lot of these kind of people. And there is no ad hominem attack, there is nothing personal. It is taking their work, the written work, evaluating it and giving a critical rebuttal. So that is the sort of thing we are doing to rebuttal, to response to Hindu phobia, taking on the big intellectual giants of Hindu phobia and giving a response to it.
I'll paraphrase the next couple of questions and align them together into one. What is the predominant reason for wokeism, and how do we define it a bit more simpler way? And how should India deal with such conspiracies and toolkits which are out to destroy us?
So wokeism started when Marxism came and started being applied to race. And the first, before there was critical race theory, there was critical legal theory. There was a Harvard law professor who coined the term critical legal theory a couple decades ago. It was sort of a very dormant thing, not very active in the public. And then others developed out of the critical legal theory, they developed critical race theory to apply to society in general. And then, what really gave it the gravitas is that the left hijacked the Black Lives Matter movement. The left hijacked it, worked with the blacks to sort of convince them that the leftist ideology is the best way to get black rights for black people in America. And then the Muslims joined in. So this is a coalition of the left and Muslims in America and blacks as sort of clumped together, and then they brought in the LGBTQ plus people also, as sort of each of us is oppressed by society, and so we are all going to stick together as the oppressed people against the oppressor, which is all the education system, the establishment, the constitution, the founding fathers, all of that stuff. So this is what became wokeism and its American form. And now the backlash from the right wing is to get rid of it completely. So you have the breaking America going on is a syndrome where the progressive wing of the Democratic Party are all woke, and the other side, the conservative wing of the Republican Party, are all anti-woke. And this is where America has lost the middle ground. Now, that is fine for America because they have to sort out their problems. But the Indianization of wokeism is a very dangerous thing, because it doesn't fit into our ideas, it doesn't fit into our structure. But it has been done out of mischief from places like Harvard Kennedy School, which Dr. Swami talked about, and with the help of Indians, because Indians are for sale. A lot of Indians are for sale. It's very easy to get them into this system and they'll do all the dirty work for you. So we have people like Ajanta Subramaniam, we have Suraj Yengde, we have Sondarya Rajan, we have all kind of people like that in the United States, and they've come up with this Indianization of wokeism. And don't think it is something in the future, because you have Justice Chandrachud quoting wokeism very openly in his lectures, quoting Harvard people and promoting it. You have Ashoka University with lot of activities of this sort. You have people in Delhi University. You have some of these Harvard guys who are involved in this kind of thing, are advisors to Niti Aayog. We've mentioned their names in our book. So it is in India in a serious way. And we think that a lot of youth are kind of misinformed, because they think this will get their particular community, it will give rights to Dalits and all that. It's only going to create more divisiveness, and I don't think it's going to help anybody in the long run.
I think what we need to do is to make sure that develop some people who can rebut this.
Yes.
Challenge them to debates which they will not come. So that is the way to show them down. I think that has become necessary. You're doing a wonderful job in America. I know that you get sometimes heckled also by professors of the universities who should be doing other things. But anyway, you have been doing it almost alone. But I think we now need a team to assist you to replicate what you're doing in the United States.
It's also in the corporate sector. So I think there's manipulation of language, with these terms of like diversity, equity, inclusion. Diversity means including only certain people by excluding others. Equity is not equality. So we have to understand the definition and the language manipulation that the left uses to make these words sound good. So in the corporate world also, you have diversity training, caste sensitivity training is coming up in all corporates. It's already there in some of the big multinationals in Mumbai. And they have these DEI programs, which are all critical race theory based. So it's all pervasive. It's entered the government. It's in the education system. It's in the workplace. So there's no getting away. But I think you can be aware and question and reject some of these ideas. So when you go through diversity training, for example, you can refuse and reject some of the ideas that make you, that force you to atone for sins that you have not committed.
And you're a tech city. I don't know if you have ventures funded by Omidyar Network. Maybe you do. But Bangalore is full of these ventures. Bangalore, Chennai. Omidyar Network is one of these billionaires, worse than Soros, because he's half the age and has many times more money. He's of Iranian origin, French-Iranian origin, billionaire, multi-billionaire many times over, and very interested in bringing this kind of ideology into India through tech ventures. So he's invested $500 million in India already in tech ventures. And these tech people are then trained, brainwashed into social justice and youth empowerment and village empowerment. And all these are nice terms to do this kind of ideological engineering on them. And they're also doing a lot of data mining about the hinterlands, about the village economies, about people who have social problems, political problems, legal cases, So this is a use of data sciences and artificial intelligence and investments in technology to create a whole Breaking India force at that level. This is very, very sophisticated. So in this book, we call him Soros 2.0, this kind of a threat.
Thank you so much, sir. I request Vijay Bharati ji to please come forward and present a small memento to Professor Vijay Vishwanathan ji. I request Rajesh ji to felicitate Rajiv Malhotra ji. I request Chandrasekhar ji to felicitate Dr. Subramani Swami. Ram Mohan ji, can you please felicitate and present a memento to B.J. Rao Garu? Now I request Chandrasekhar ji to present the vote of thanks.
Hello everyone. First of all, thanks so much for giving me this opportunity to propose a vote of thanks for this wonderful session. I'd like to start with the Vice Chancellor, Sri B.J. Rao Garu, for permitting us to conduct this program here in a short notice. Thank you so much, sir. Then Arvind Rao Garu, ex-DGP, he has been the initial contact for us to have this three-day event. Thank you so much, sir. And then L.V. Subramaniam Garu, ex-Chief Secretary, he is not here at the moment. And Chamarthi Umamaishwara Garu, he is here also amongst us. I would like to thank him. He has been coordinating with us. And Raju Malhotra ji, and of course, Professor Vijaya Vishwanathan ji, without you, of course, we could not have done this program. And Sirish Dopeshwar ji, our President Pragya Bharati. And also, I would like to thank the Police Department for cooperating with us. And B.S. Sharma ji, thank you, sir. And the management and staff of this university. And I think I haven't missed anyone. If I missed, sorry for that. Finally, thanks everyone for cooperating us to have this program successfully. Thanks so much.